God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord could have done either of those. He didn't. He spoke. He said, let there be light. Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. It's one of those days I'm going to ask that question again. That one I ask from time to time, which is, what is the top news story to God? We can't think like God. We can consult his word. We can spend time with people who are more mature Christians than we are. We can pray. We can listen. We can read his word again and again, and every time find something new in it. But we can't think like him. But we can, through studying his word, spending time working with him, and being around Christians more mature than we are, we can know that God has a plan still in place, and that is free redemption. The gift of redemption is still available through the blood of Jesus Christ. And that offer stands until the day that it doesn't stand any longer. So if you've not made that decision to accept the Lord as your Savior, to agree to be changed by him and to act like he's your King, live that way, I encourage you to do it now. But if you were to consult God about the top news story, it might be the election. It's just around the corner. God might be very stressed out about that. Nothing stresses God. He already knows who wins. He already knows if it's an honest victory or a rigged victory. And if it's rigged, he knows who's done it in advance. He knows all of these things. So what might be the top news story to God? I think that if you were to ask God about news, of course, nothing is news to him beyond the gospel, the good news. You might ask, what would make God weep? God weeping. Jesus wept. Well, remember when Jesus stood outside the tomb of Lazarus in that famous, famous sentence, Jesus wept, the shortest sentence in the Bible. Why was he weeping? Human death. And the failure of his friends to understand that he was the Messiah, that he himself is life. There's a lot of conjecture on why he wept. Could be some of those things. It could be other those things, other than those things. But Jesus wept. The tomb was there. His friend was dead. His other friends were weeping. They thought that Lazarus was gone. They didn't understand Jesus could return him to life. And Jesus also knew that there were people standing there in the crowd, anxious to turn him into the religious authorities if he dared do something as horrible as raise a man from the dead and deliver one more sign that he, in fact, was and is the Messiah. I tend to believe it's because of the death. The stench, the tomb, looking at where his friend's body lay, and his other friends weeping over death, a death that was never supposed to occur. But humankind had chose their own way. So Jesus might weep. In fact, I'm sure he weeps over what's going on in Canada, and by extension will be going on here. It's going on here in another way. I told you yesterday, if you heard the program, about a guy named Anthony Thomas, or his nickname is T.J. Hoover II. T.J. went into the hospital, very sick, very ill, and was pronounced at one point brain dead. So his family prayed, and they wept, and they stayed with T.J., and his family had a gut feeling that, no, T.J. is not brain dead. The doctors, though, made the decision to begin to harvest TJ's organs. And as this was going on, TJ was convulsing and weeping. And his family members said, wait, this doesn't seem right. No, that's a very common reflex to weep and convulse when someone's getting ready to cut your organs out. Well, TJ is alive. TJ woke up. He's learning to live again, to walk again and to feed himself again, but he is alive. Praise God. I talked about that yesterday. This is from Canada. Canadian doctors are finding it morally distressing that the country's euthanasia program titled Medical Assistance in Dying, MAID, the A, by the way, is lowercase. The M, the A, and the D are uppercase. In other words, it looks like MAD, is now available to people who are not just terminally ill, but simply unhappy with their life circumstances. Now, I've been talking about this for about 4 years, that this law will be used to increase suicides as a socially acceptable behavior, just the same way they did with abortions. It's just exactly the same way. Euthanasia was sold into the world as a safe and rare procedure, just like abortion was sold into the world. Only in the cases where a mother's life is at risk. Only in the cases where the child is no more than 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 120 days, 240 days old. Shout your abortion. Shout your euthanasia. This is from the Post-Millennial. Physicians have expressed guilt over the program's expansion and their participation in it, they reported to the Daily Mail. In 2021, Canada allowed more people to be eligible for MAID, including those with incurable but not necessarily terminal illnesses, leading to 30% more people requesting physician-assisted suicide. But documents obtained by the Mail revealed that many doctors are not happy with the program's continual escalation towards more death. Here's some examples of people who have chosen this program. People who are homeless. Therefore, they should be killed, because nothing can help. I'll be frank with you, perfectly clear. I went through a season in my life where I seriously considered suicide. I didn't seriously consider it. I decided to do it. And I called my mother and expected her to agree with me once I made my brilliant case as to why things weren't going to get better. Instead, she said something just so smart. Do you have to do it today? Could you put a point on your calendar? Could you do it 30 days from now? Okay, well, I guess I could do that. In the meantime, she told my father and my sister, who flew down to where I was living in Salt Lake City that night and surprised me in the morning. My dad saying, I'll be here until this isn't an issue anymore. My sister said the same thing. My sister leaving college, my father leaving work. Yeah, it woke me up. That, and understanding that a quack psychiatrist had put me on Prozac after two meetings. Dropped the Prozac. I hadn't been on it very long. Thank God I could get off of it. And funny that, the suicidal thoughts were gone. One Ontario doctor told the Associated Press that a patient was very obese and feeling so depressed about it that she described herself as a useless body taking up space. Another woman sought MAID when she experienced the loss of her husband, sibling, and cat over the course of 6 weeks. The Mail noted. There are people who have chosen this because they're sad. They're sad. They're not hopeless. They're feeling sad. An AP investigation revealed how a classified report written by Ontario's Ministry of Solicitor General admitted to making mistakes with the program as it grew. One of the lessons learned in this report was the case of a 75-year-old blind patient with high blood pressure and a history of strokes. The man sought MAID because of his failing eyesight and is concerned that it would not improve. The official report says the MAID team violated legal standards by not consulting specialists, having little discussion about alternatives to euthanasia, and scheduling of the assisted suicide in accordance with his wife's schedule. This is happening in Canada, and I believe Jesus weeps. Canadian abortionist and euthanasia provider Dr. Ileana Wiebe, who feels no such pangs of guilt, recently told a BBC documentary, I love my job because there's nobody more grateful than my patients and their families. The fact that programs like this expand should be self-explanatory. Government never retreats. And the party of death doesn't see any big difference between killing a 50-year-old woman who is obese and for that reason wants to be killed, and killing a child in the womb. They just simply don't want us to talk about it. They would prefer it not be discussed, that it just go on in the shadows. But it's our job to talk about the difficult things, particularly here at AFR, because we can. Because we have an audience of one, God Almighty, because of you, the AFR family. Because you fund this network. We can talk about the uncomfortable things like human beings killing God's children in this way. They don't want us to talk about it. And also from Canada, Justin Trudeau, the dictator of Canada, is a sponsor of the Online Harms Act, and it's very clear what it's going to do. It's going to weaponize government against any form of free speech. Canada is pretending that this has to do with protecting kids from online pornography. Note, Justin Trudeau's party wants kids to watch online pornography. This has nothing to do with this. This is about pressuring people to not say what I've just said about their program. It's about giving government teeth to be able to stop people from talking about the assisted suicide program. And if you doubt this, look back at what Kaiser Permanente in the United States did. When it was 2019 and there were very few people talking about the transing of kids, me and a few other people in conservative media, and I remember it well, I will never forget having a very, very well-known and good man, he's a good man, very well-known national radio host, tell me I was making a mistake talking about the medical abuse of children. It was fringe. It made us sound crazy. There's a great article talking about the pressure people were under when they encountered Kaiser Permanente. Few people understand the pressure we were under back in 2019 if you had a so-called trans-identified child in California and had Kaiser Permanente health insurance. We were expected to start our kids on puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones almost immediately after their declaration. I saved my records from Dr. Ho, a Kaiser pediatric endocrinologist, who suggested I contact Gender Spectrum, an Oakland-based so-called trans activist group, to help in overcoming my fears. My daughter was 13 at the time. And yep, there's the email right here in this document. According to this person, this is exactly from the doctor. I asked Dr. Ho what would be the next steps for a 14-year-old, such as Ian, if they met with him. He said he would recommend they both speak with one of Kaiser's gender specialists before proceeding. I told him that Ian had already meets with a psychiatrist and that is familiar with his mental health and physical health. He said that Kaiser's found it easier that Kaiser doctors work directly with Kaiser's own gender specialist rather than with the teen's psychiatrist outside of the Kaiser system. I voiced my concerns about the medical risk. Dr. Hull said over and over and over again, this is a emerging field and they don't know the long-term medical effects. But with any medical treatment, there are benefits and risks. And the article continues and continues and continues about the pressure they put on this parent to destroy their child's body. It's not death, but it's the death in many cases of people's abilities to reproduce. And it's being done by the same party. And it's being done with the help of Hollywood. This is The Daily Show, talking about how Republicans are transing kids, are causing kids suicide by not transing them.
And as the election gets closer, the Republican Party is going all in on its transphobia. But seriously, $65 million on anti-trans ads? Do you know how disappointing it is to finally have someone spend $65 million on me? And it's for this I didn't want hateful attack ads. I wanted a house in the hills with six walk-in closets. But with anti-trans messaging playing such a large role in our politics, it's no wonder we're seeing so much anti-trans violence and suicide. And that's something we do have hard data on.
Yeah, the hard data is this. People who are convinced they're born in the wrong body are mentally ill and very likely to try suicide. More likely after the procedures. The so-called trans violence, yeah, it's so-called trans women beating up trans women. So-called. We'll come back on The Disciples View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Coming up, how much money do you think Michelle Obama is going to get paid for a one-hour speech on diversity and inclusion? This is at a Munich conference. And by the way, speaking of diversity, equity, and inclusion, I want to give you a quick question you can ask. If you ever get drawn in to a DEI conference, it's a polite question. You could view it as passive aggressive. Maybe it is, but it's polite. And let's be wise as serpents, gentle as doves. If you ever get forced into one of these conferences at work and your workplace can sustain this, there's a very simple question you can ask the DEI organizer that will show the massive lie of equity. Remember, everyone needs to start at the same place. That's what new equity means. You must take from some people and give to others so everyone starts at the same place. In other words, it's communism, obviously. Now, in your church, I hope that you're on the lookout for this slow erosion of focusing on what the Bible actually says. Because so often it starts with good intent, as would make sense. Satan masquerading as an angel of light, it would make sense. I'll never forget our church in Seattle was a Lutheran church we were attending. And right now, just so we're clear, I attend a non-denominational evangelical Christian church called Real Life Networks. Or Real Life Ministries, pardon me, Real Life Ministries. So just so you know where my bias comes from. But I was attending a Lutheran church at the time, and it became very liberal. And I remember the warning signs now that I look back. And I was uncomfortable at the time. One of our pastors, great guy, just such a fun guy. He, in his sermons, began mentioning the environment. Just from time to time. And I think he thought he was doing it wisely. But the first time he mentioned it, I thought, huh, that's interesting. The environment. Okay. And then as time went on, he got to a point where he issued a sermon that did not, once, quote Jesus. Not once. It didn't quote the Bible. And I became very disturbed and spoke with him one-on-one. And he said, oh, well, I thought that the mention of God is implicit since I talked about God's world. And I said to him, with all due respect, Pastor, you're warming up to deliver a political statement on this for a political solution. That wasn't a sermon. Lo and behold, there came a time I walked into the church one morning with my family, my young family. My little girl was probably two. And we walked in, we sat down where we normally sat to learn that there was a guest speaker that was not put on the schedule. And the guest speaker had come from Olympia, the capital of Washington State, truly, truly a fallen state. And the guest speaker, unannounced, rose to deliver his sermon. And it began with this. You have power. You have far more power than you know. And he began to discuss some bills coming up in Olympia, like so-called free health care for everybody, and why Jesus Christ would back that bill. Free health care for everybody. Because Jesus, as you know, was very active in trying to get government to do things. Remember all the times Jesus went and asked for government programs? No, you don't, because he didn't. He didn't. Jesus didn't spend any time engaging with powerful people. Not unless they came to him looking for redemption. As one very famous man did late at night. And he was almost there. Almost got redemption. But Nicodemus couldn't quite see it or leave his power base. Tradition tells us later that Nicodemus did become a secret Christian, did in fact follow the Lord. Tradition. I pray that's true. So when this pastor began, and he was screaming, I mean, I speak for a living. I know the difference between speaking in an energetic tone and loudly, and he was screaming. And I got up and said to my wife, I'm leaving. You want to come with me? So we got up and we left the sanctuary. Turned our back on the speaker. And after church, because we had breakfast after church and we had a little table we sat with and visited with people, the pastor who'd invited this guest speaker came to me and said, Hey, I'd like you to meet our guest speaker. Sure. Went over and shook his hand. He says, I see you were bothered by my speech or my sermon. I said, well, pastor, with all due respect, it wasn't a sermon. It was political rally making. Well, I think the church body needs to be political. I said, I prefer that we follow Jesus. Because I never saw Jesus make a political statement. I have nothing against people voting at all. But if we're teaching the gospel here, no one should have a question on which topics in which to vote. The healthcare plan you talked about today mandates the killing of babies. It mandates it. Everybody will pay to kill babies. You didn't mention that in your political screed this morning, with all due respect, Pastor. And I said, if you like, we could organize a debate here, right in the church, not in the sanctuary, and we can debate every bill you just brought up from the perspective of the faith. Or I said, let's not divide the body of Christ. Indeed, Pastor, let's not. Let's not do that again. The church ultimately ended up importing a new pastor from Chicago who liked to fill his sermons with South Park cartoon references. For real. I warned them at the time, you know, this guy came from the George Soros school. They didn't believe me and they learned. Well, it wasn't just me, many people. Church is still there, praise God. Still operating, but man, it nearly died. It nearly died. So I hope you're paying attention to your churches. This is a so-called bishop named Rosie O'Neill. She's the founder and so-called senior pastor of Koinonia Christian Church in Greenville, North Carolina. She had Kamala Harris go speak there, and she called her a phenomenal servant of God.
But I know that there's still a joy down in your spirit that will help me honor this phenomenal servant of God. I believe a tremendous leader. Please stand on your feet and go crazy with me as we welcome the sitting vice president of the United States of America. Help me celebrate Kamala Harris.
A phenomenal.
And thank you for the opportunity to allow me to worship with you.
A phenomenal servant of God, evidenced by her. What? A phenomenal servant of God, evidenced by her fanatical obsession with abortion at all costs and all times. Evidenced by her gargantuan lie to the American people that Joe Biden wasn't experiencing mental decline. Evidenced by her involving herself in apparent blackmail to force Biden to get out of the race. Evidenced by that. Evidenced by her continual lying throughout the campaign. I was never border czar. That's a Trump invention. Evidenced by the clear fruit of the Spirit produced by her policies like the open border, which has welcomed in drug cartels to set up shop in major cities and now in small towns. A phenomenal servant of God, said Bishop Rosie O'Neill. I hope the people in that church, Koinonia Christian Center Church in Greenville, North Carolina, might think about what might cause Jesus to weep. Wholesale, always on, any cost, any time, abortion, I think would do that. An actress named Sherry Lee Ralph of a program called Abbott Elementary stumped for Kamala Harris. This was at a Philadelphia church. And she's making a slow reference here, an analogy about Donald Trump being like, you remember the criminal they chose? Instead of Jesus, they chose to have a criminal live? Barbarous? That's her point as she gets to speak at a church.
The people had a choice. People had a choice. They said, you can go with this, or you can go with that. You can go with this, the criminal. We know he is a criminal. He has proven to us that he is a criminal. That is why he is in chains. His name is Barabbas. Then we have that young man over here.
She was making a reference to Donald Trump as Barabbas. Well, we do know that President Trump has been convicted of 34, is it, felonies? 34 felonies? What was the root cause of those felonies? It was a misdemeanor that had expired. It had expired. It was brought back to life by a corrupt prosecutor who lied it back into life and then expanded it into 34 or more felonies off of a bookkeeping error or lie. This is very much like you handing a check to somebody and in your memo in your checkbook, back when we had checkbooks, instead of writing down lunch, you wrote down breakfast. Or at least that, I mean, that would be a meal. Instead of making it lunch, you wrote down lawn care. It would be very much like that because hush money is not illegal. It's done all the time. And this happened in a church. Now, I want to be clear. I have no issues with pastors speaking about issues that come up in government. None whatsoever. It shouldn't be necessary. If we're in the gospel, we shouldn't need to be in politics. If we're in the gospel talking about the so-called social issues, that marriage is between one man and one woman, and that sex outside of marriage is fornication, sex with someone not your partner while married is adultery, that sex is to be contained to a marital relationship, one man, one woman. If it is outside of that, same-sex activity, that is also considered a sin in the Bible. If we're in that, we shouldn't have to talk about this or that bill related to these things. God created man and woman in his image. In his image, he created us male and female. That goes to the whole so-called trans lie. And we can expand this on and on and on. Reparations, coveting, it's stealing. We shouldn't have to go and do the hard-edged beating on the table, vote for this bill or for this candidate. On the topic of candidates, there's a huge debate about President Trump being worthy of the vote of Christians, specifically evangelicals. We're called to be in the world and not of it. So to be in the world is to be realist and to recognize that we're trapped between two political parties. Right now, those parties are going through a major series of reformations. The Democrat Party is now the party of war. They're the party of always on war. They're the party of the military-industrial intelligence complex. They're the party of all government all the time. The Republican Party under President Trump has made a shift to being more populist and, in fact, I think more a party that picks and chooses the ideals they follow based upon what's going to win elections. And if you compare the two candidates, there's this. One of them has fought for life. The other fights for death. Now, I don't make political recommendations on this show. I can't. We're not allowed. I won't because we're not allowed. And because if we're in the gospel, we shouldn't need someone like me to do this. You simply consult the fruits. You have one side that wants law and order, one side that clearly sponsors lack of law and order. And if we go to God's design, he is overall below love, because God is love, he is truth, he is light, he's also a God of order. It's evident in the cosmos and the way that those planets and stars move and, you could say, work together. It's evidence in the perfect balance of oxygen, carbon, nitrogen. It's evidence in the perfect way our DNA is designed, that is software that writes software and hardware that creates hardware. Unbelievably complex and yet beautifully simple. It is evident in the Ten Commandments. It is evident in the Old Testament. It is evident in how Jesus treated his disciples in order, law and order, delivered peacefully. And with love, because God is love. If we're in the gospel, we shouldn't need to be in specific bills, in specific candidates. We should be in prayer. That no matter what happens in this election, because something's going to happen in this election, we will keep our trust where it belongs. Not in chariots and horses, but in every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. The ones we hear in the dark, when we're praying and checking the spirits to make sure it's God's voice. And the ones we read in the book he inspired. We'll come back with a magic question you can ask a DEI person that will immediately show the lie. It's Todd Herman. This is The Disciples View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We appreciate you being supporters of AFR. If you're not yet a monthly supporter, you can do that at afr.net. And monthly support helps the Wildman family, who God has given the responsibility of stewarding the network, helps them make more clear and strategic financial decisions. And we exist largely upon your donations, which are, in fact, tax deductible. We'll get to the Tower Babbling and a personal note here in a second. Michelle Obama is going to receive a little honorarium for a speech she's giving. This is going to be at a Munich conference. The honorarium is $741,000 for a one-hour speech on diversity and inclusion. So if we're counting, that is somewhere around 20 times the amount of money the average American earns in a year that Michelle Obama will get for a one-hour speech, because she is an expert at diversity and inclusion, being a member of the elite who is, well, guarded constantly by armed guards, who can, at the turn of a hat, leave the White House and suddenly become a very successful movie producer, she and her husband, because they had a whole bunch of experience producing movies, who suddenly at the drop of a hat can go and invent a very, very healthy sugared drink that's very healthy, though, and have that land in stores all around the world, and at the same time give a speech at the Democrat National Committee where she bemoans people, folks having more than they need. She actually said that her parents brought her up to be suspicious of folks who have more than they need. So in other words, she is a very accomplished liar, except we can see the lies. Praise God. I wanted to share with you, and I mentioned this last segment, a question that's come up to me in regard to ever being called into a DEI summit or meeting at your place of work. This happened to me when I worked in radio in Seattle. I have nothing disparaging to say about the experience. It's a great experience. They treated me very, very well. Happened to be Bonneville Communications, owned by the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints. But they had a diversity, equity, inclusion meeting, and it was about white privilege. And during the meeting, I raised my hand and asked the woman who was presenting what my particular privilege was. She said, well, it's white. And I said, yeah, but what are the specifics? Specifically, how have I experienced that? She said, well, that manifests in different ways for different people. Okay, but you know I have it. Well, yeah, you're white. What is black privilege? And when I said that, everybody was shocked. One of my friends got it, turned around and smiled, but everyone else went, oh! She said, there is no black privilege. I said, oh, I see. So equal and opposite no longer counts. Okay. She didn't like it. There was more to the conversation, but I'll tell the further story in detail later time. Here's the question I would ask this time. I would actually raise my hand and say, yeah, so you described equity as getting everybody to the same starting point, because that's unfair that not everyone started the same place. Do I understand that correctly? Yes. When do I get to lead the conference? Is it now? Can we switch places and I'll come up and lead, and then Shelley over here from accounting can lead? See? Wait, no, wait. It's all about everybody getting a chance to start at the same place. So why don't you sit down for a little bit and I'll lead, and then Shelley from accounting, and then Rich over here from sales. How's that sound? I think that would work. Certainly show the lie. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with their feature called the Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
Culture is, it is a reflection of our moment and our time. And present culture is the way we express how we're feeling about the moment.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites in the Tower of Babbling. Almost always three. Sometimes we get a bonus. This is from CNN. And a commentator named Angela Rye.
And what I think is a mistake is to let white folks escape the accountability that they must face for not showing up to save democracy themselves. So the responsibility of saving democracy should be on the largest demographic in this country. That is white men and white women.
So I assume then that we're going to be doing away with the secret ballot, or perhaps marking them with the race of the people who voted, and then going about the country and having a unique punishment for white people who chose to vote for President Trump or to not vote at all. You see where DEI gets you. It gets you to madness, utter madness, because it is designed to create division. Why wouldn't it create it in people's minds? This is an entertainer. What is she? They call her a musician, rapper, singer, actress, Lizzo. And she has a message for America. What will America under Kamala Harris look like?
I'm so proud to be from this city. You know, they say if Kamala wins, then the whole country will be like Detroit. Okay? Proud like Detroit. Resilient like Detroit.
Got it. Destroyed like Detroit. Last up in the Tower of Babbling, this is an actual speaker at a Kamala Harris rally.
Say it with me if you know it. I'm going to sing it. Bum, bum, ba-na-nam. Hey, that's really good. Okay, let's try something different.
That's an actual speaker at a Kamala Harris rally talking to actual adults. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time, and I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
So we often wrap up this program with a statement, something I've learned, something I want to pass on to you. And I don't know why I shied away from doing this. I've done this on radio for years. I had a name for this segment. I don't know why I didn't do that here until now, but I'll do it. On a personal note today. Do you have a moment in your parenting that lives forever as a positive memory in your mind? I mean, I know there's many of them, right? Those of us who are parents. Sadly, because of what happens with our daughter and to our daughter, we went through a period of time where those were sparse. Really sparse. Very sad. And I will always regret that. And I've taken it to Jesus. And in fact, I've taken it through PTSD therapy, EMDR, if you want to know, because of what we dealt with. But of course, there are moments prior to that and some after that stand to me as some of the most precious moments of my life. This is one of them. This happens just by random. My wife was downstairs and my daughter and I were sitting on the couch, and there'd been a song that they were learning at school, at her Christian school. And my daughter had sung it, and my wife said, hey, why don't you play your guitar? And she ended up filming it. And now, I just want to make note here. The guitar is out of tune because I just picked it up. I didn't take time to tune it. I didn't realize what we were filming. And it's me and my daughter. It's me weighing closer to 300 pounds than the 202 I weigh today. I look like a very different person. My daughter is probably four or five. And she's sitting next to me. She's to my left on the couch. She's in an orange shirt. She with her blonde hair and blue eyes. I'm in a long underwear shirt with a black t-shirt underneath and my Ibanez guitar. Like a circle, I'm stuck knocking at your door. Love grows one by one, two by two, four by four. Love grows one. And it goes on. And that was when she was 4 or 5. For my birthday this past year, my wife and daughter conspired to give me an opportunity to redo this. This is just this past August. It's me, lighter, same guitar, gray shirt, my daughter, now a legal adult, looking very much like a legal adult. Some tattoos on her hand. No, I did not like the tattoos. That's her body. I did not like them. It just made me sad to see my daughter's body sort of vandalized. This is what I told her. Characteristic of her, they're tasteful. They're actually beautiful art if you like art on bodies. She's sitting next to me, sitting straight up on the couch. The guitar is in better tune. I hadn't played it in probably 5 years. No, not quite. Probably 4 years. So I'm rusty, and my daughter is nervous. And here it is. That will always be one of my most prized possessions. Because for just a little while, I got to relive what it was like to be Magic Dad, who could solve all the problems. That was a big mistake, to be Magic Dad. To not make clear that only God truly solves the big problems in life. But I'll tell you another moment, and it stands so clearly to me. It was the night that she and I went to the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. to go see the Nutcracker Suite. And she picked out my tie. She wanted me to have a tie that matched her dress. Her dress was bright red. Beautiful, beautiful red. I guess it was, Valentine's red. She found a tie that matched that exactly. I wore a white shirt buttoned up. And a black suit. She wore her dress. We went to the Kennedy Center. And a friend of mine had given us tickets just above the presidential box. Really cool seats. And when we arrived, we thought we'd go up and eat dinner. But I didn't know you had to have reservations weeks in advance. First time I'd been to the Kennedy Center. I should have known that. So as we're standing there, we said, well, there's a little cafe downstairs. We'll go eat down there. And a woman said, I will not hear of it. Is this your first time here? I said, yes, ma'am. We've only living here for a year, and I'm only going to be here for a year. I will not hear of it. You will take our seats. Oh, no, ma'am. I couldn't do that. She goes, no, you will. You will. You will take our seats. I will not have this beautiful little girl have anything other than a fine meal in that dress and you in your suit. So you will take our seats. So I thanked her very dearly. We went in and we ate, and my daughter was very good in restaurants, very polite, and I will admit, she was, to use a cliched phrase, the belle of the ball. A lot of people had been standing in line for dinner, and they witnessed that. They knew it was our first time there. They knew we were visitors. So we ate our meal, thank the waitress who brought my daughter a volcano cake. And we went downstairs. And she met a little girl named Mercedes from Texas. I'll never forget Mercedes from Texas. She had a blue dress on. And together they found a little portion of a stage. And together they decided to go dance a little bit before the Nutcracker Suite. I still have pictures of it. Ultimately, it was time for us to be seated, and we went up into these beautiful seats my friend Bob had gifted us with that night. And the balcony we were in sat just above the presidential balcony, and I took her to the edge and said, if the president was here, that would be where the president would sit, right there. That's how good these seats are. And then the play began, the ballet. She was enthralled. She'd done some ballet dancing and some Irish dancing, and she was enthralled. And I watched her just be consumed by the beauty of the play. And just before intermission, some men, I guess, became distracted, maybe fatigued by the play, the ballet, and they began speaking to each other. And adults were looking over nervously, anxiously, trying to give them a social signal of, hey, guys, this is not over. This is just intermission. It was my daughter who looked at them and said, shh, shh, and pointed at the stage. The same bell of the bowl. And around her, adults quietly clapped. I have a picture of that night, of us before we left, me holding her hand. She recently had that made into a wood carving. There are things that will go in my casket. That will. So will the picture of us side by side remaking Love Goes Round in a Circle. In the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because He first loved us, we speak His Word. We walk in the path of Jesus to make disciples of all nations until God gives us permission to speak again together. May His peace wash over you. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View. Do you love me?